Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Do you know a student getting ready to go to college? Or are you looking at going back to school yourself? The Woodward Hines Education Foundation and the Get to College program help more Mississippians get to and through college to get certificates and degrees that lead to meaningful employment. They offer free college planning advice, including hands-on FAFSA completion assistance through in-person or virtual appointments. Visit gettocollege.org to learn more.
Good morning. It's 8:30 on Thursday, May 2nd. I'm Desiree Frazier. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, after months of debate, plans for expanding Medicaid in Mississippi may have ended for this legislative session. Then, language barriers can prevent many people from voting. A new initiative seeks to bridge that gap. Plus, a new study by the University of Mississippi and Harvard finds a connection between bad cholesterol and Alzheimer's. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. Plans to expand Medicaid in Mississippi may have ended last night as legislative leadership continues to disagree on how it should happen. When lawmakers dismissed yesterday, they were undecided on what the expansion should look like. Last night, Republican House Speaker Jason White issued a statement saying his chamber plans to file a signed conference report this morning to put Medicaid expansion on the ballot through a referendum. He states the referendum process would be twofold. Mississippians will have the opportunity to vote if they are for Medicaid expansion or not. And if so, should the parameters of the program include a work requirement? Lieutenant Governor Delbert Hoseman issued a statement about an hour later saying the speaker's idea wasn't well received by his chamber. He says, "We are disappointed in the outcome of this session, but value the discussions which occurred this session. The first time this legislature has seriously considered health care reform in our state. A strong work requirement with necessary exceptions is a bottom line for many senators. Without the Senate's approval for a referendum, it's likely Medicaid plans have stalled indefinitely for this legislative session, and some lawmakers say the issue may not be revisited for several years. Prior to those announcements, several lawmakers shared their thoughts on how they can move forward. An agreement between the two chambers was reached on Monday that would allow for working Mississippians to earn up to 138% of the federal poverty level and qualify for Medicaid. But concerns were raised by House Democrats that leaving a mandatory work requirement could kill the legislation if the government doesn't grant the waiver. House Minority Leader Democrat Robert Johnson of Natchez spoke with our Will Stribling about why he wanted to get the bill recommitted for further debates. He says it's highly unlikely the federal government would grant Mississippi a waiver for a work requirement. He says there needs to be flexibility in the legislation so it can continue to move forward regardless of that issue.
Now, some people say, what if Trump gets elected? Well, if Trump gets elected, you come in and do your work requirement and get the president to do whatever you think Trump will do. But no state who approved work requirements under Trump has a working, effective work requirement, and at least 9 or 13 of them. 9 of them don't even apply. They got it, but they don't even use it. I mean, and what they found out that it was too expensive and too cumbersome and too onerous to try to administer, so they just didn't do it. They just went on and expanded Medicaid, and they are enjoying the fruits of having $1 billion a year and a $650 million incentive while we're sitting around playing around, finding a way not to provide health care for people.
Do you attribute today's recommendal to the pressure that your caucus is able to place on leadership because they need y'all's votes to be able to reach that two-thirds majority needed to overcome a likely veto.
Yes, I think it's a result of the – that's the way the legislative process works. They told us – they try to encourage us to vote for a bill that we think is a bad bill because they said the Senate wouldn't move. The pressure of the Senate wouldn't allow them to concede on the issues that we thought about. Well, they need our votes just as bad. So why not think about the things that will get the votes that you need to get it passed in the House? And we think that is just what happened. What we want is for the House to recommit the bill so that we can fix some of the things we're concerned about, and very small things. We're concerned about a lot of things, but one small thing could be fixed, and we could go in there, we could have a bill we could vote for. We think work requirements are a killer. That's why we don't – not because we don't want people to work. We know CMS won't approve it. We want real Medicaid expansion. But what we cannot abide and what we cannot be a party to is the CMS telling us no the first time and then putting into law that we will reapply the same way and get turned down again and again and again, which means we'll never get Medicaid expansion. And so that's all we ask them to do, to take the faulty reapplication process out. Either take the work requirement out of the reapplication or just don't say in there that we'll reapply and just come back and start over with a bill that we have, a statute that's in place, come back and decide how we want to reapply. But don't lock ourselves into reapplying in a way that we know will get turned down every year. That's all we want. And if they want it to be a lie, hell, we just, of all the things, we just suspended the rules to take up the SAFER Act, which is far from being an imminent serious issue in the state of Mississippi. If you can do that, you can do it for Medicaid expansion.
What do you make of this moment where there's, you know, this really big issue that matters to a lot of people in the state and has been a cause championed by your caucus for a decade now?
For a decade.
And y'all are in a rare position where y'all have real power over whether
one
or not
time,
this gets passed.
Because it's a 3/5 vote, right. And 2/3 if you consider the veto override. Look, when you've been introducing legislation for 10 years to get it done, when you've been introducing amendments every year to make sure it happens, that we don't have a – I don't personally, and my caucus has decided, we don't have a reason to vote for a bad piece of legislation that does nothing. And so we're committed to seeing this through, seeing it through the fruitful and successful end, but not for the political end, to be able to say we did something. We want real Medicaid expansion.
Also among the Democrats who voted to recommit the bill for further debate is Representative John Faulkner of Holly Springs. He says the compromise reached stopped short of what Mississippians really need.
Had the bill come up today for a vote, I would have been a definite no against the bill. I've been fighting for the expansion of Medicaid here in Mississippi ever since I've been in office and I was elected in 2013. So I've always been a staunch supporter of the expansion of Medicaid. But this particular piece of legislation, this conference report, is not Medicaid expansion to me. It was a Medicaid expansion by name only. So it was easy for me to vote against it because I couldn't, in good conscience, make a vote for a piece of legislation that I know wasn't going to help the people in the state who needs it the most.
This issue and this vote, how does it compare in your mind in terms of just important issues that have come up and votes that you've had to take over your tenure in the legislature?
I think this is a historical moment, you know, for Democrats in this state to have supported and fought for the expansion of Medicaid for all these years, find ourselves in a position where we would have to vote against a bill that potentially expands Medicaid because it really doesn't do that. It's historical for us to be able to stand together and get that done.
Now, lawmakers could change their minds today, pick up the bill, and address Medicaid expansion, but it's unlikely. Next, language barriers can prevent many people from voting. A new initiative seeks to change that. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Want to keep up with MPB? Go to mpbonline.org, or you can find us on social media on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at MPB Online.
Mississippi Antique Showcase is coming to Natchez, Mississippi, Friday, May 3rd and Saturday, May 4th. We'll have professional appraisers on site evaluating antiques, furniture, and treasured keepsakes. For a one-time gift of $100, you'll receive one ticket, complimentary food, cocktails, and a single item appraisal. Call 1-844-874-6874 or go to mpbonline.org to reserve your spot now.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. Advocates for voter engagement are launching a campaign to reach young voters. The goal? Reach across the language barrier to non-English speakers. The program launched by the Southern Poverty Law Center will educate and energize, hopefully, young people of color about the power of voting. The program spans Mississippi, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and Louisiana. They say reports in these states show younger voters feel underrepresented by their government and they're disinterested in participating in the upcoming election. Margaret Wong is president and CEO of the SPLC. She says this younger voting bloc has a lot of power that is waiting to be tapped.
The lack of enthusiasm to vote was driven by a combination of attitudinal and structural barriers. Two of the biggest problems that the participants identified related to voting were that they don't feel represented by the candidates and that nothing changes after elections. Participants said laws restricting the right to vote are intended to silence certain voting blocs. When shown a series of statements about voter suppression tactics at the state level in the Deep South, a majority of participants were extremely concerned about efforts to close polling places in predominantly Black neighborhoods and the denial of language translation services at certain voting locations. Secondly, to solve some of these attitudinal problems, participants want to see better representation in candidates, more information about candidates, and proof of progress from those candidates. Lastly, despite the low motivation to vote, and their perception of a lack of voting power, a majority of young people of color in the South see voting as the most effective way for them to create change in their communities. What's more, after receiving information about the importance of voting and civic engagement, participants felt much more motivated to vote in 2024. This data tells an important story. In the face of all of the attempts by certain lawmakers, judges, and election officials to diminish the voting interest and strength of young people of color, these young people still have optimism and faith in their vote and in our democracy. They imagine a better future for our country, and they're ready to act.
With these findings, Wong says they want to help young Southern voters understand the significance of politics in their lives.
Our new campaign, The South's Got Now, Decidimos, is a bilingual voter engagement campaign to educate and energize young people of color in the Deep South as they own their power as change makers in our democracy. The campaign is an on-ramp for young people to fight for the issues that matter most to them, to fight for affordable and inclusive education, access to healthcare, safe drinking water, reproductive justice, the environment, and so much more. To bridge that gap between ambivalence and action, and to help voters navigate obstacles to voting, the South's Got Now, Decidimos, will provide young people with the resources, tools, and information necessary to register and cast a ballot and fight for the multiracial, inclusive democracy we all deserve. For too long, the South has been dismissed as a region not worthy of investment, dismissed as a place where real progress is impossible. We see the consequences of decades of this disregard and lack of investment every day as cities in Mississippi and Alabama continue to struggle to provide clean water for residents, as communities remain impoverished, as people are left on their own to push against state policies that gut access to resources and opportunities. But time and again, across the arc of history, young people of color have been on the front lines fighting for a more perfect democracy, knowing that it's the doorway to freedom. and they're doing so again. Our votes have the power to change history, and these young people are poised to lead that change.
If young people do get involved with elections, Wong says they have the power to make, as she just said, significant change.
One other thing, in Mississippi, we are launching a campaign called The Road to 60. It is the 60th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act that was passed in 1965. And we're hoping to get 60,000 new and inactive voters re-registered and registered to vote and mobilize them to take part this year. That would have made a very significant difference in the recent elections for governor in Mississippi. So we hope we can demonstrate that with young people's leadership, we can make that happen.
Margaret Wong is president and CEO of the Southern Poverty Law Center. When we come back, a new study by the University of Mississippi and Harvard has found a link between bad cholesterol and Alzheimer's disease. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
What's your favorite type of music? The old standards? Country? A specific type of jazz? Maybe you love classical. In addition to Think and Radio Reading Service, we broadcast MPB Music Radio. Listen live to essential and emerging artists from your HD radio, our app, or from mpbonline.org.
I'm Vipa Fernandez. Reno, Nevada has reduced homelessness by as much as 60% in the last 2 years. Mayor Hillary Sheevy says her city has found a new way of offering shelter.
An individual pod is like an area, you know, where they can have privacy, where it's quieter. It's, I think, a way to keep dignity.
Next time, here and now.
Today at noon on MPB Think Radio.
This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. I'm Desiree Frazier. A new study through a partnership between the University of Mississippi and Harvard has found a link between a cholesterol-transporting molecule and Alzheimer's disease. The National Institutes of Health reports that Alzheimer's-related deaths have nearly doubled in Mississippi between 2011 and 2021. Other reports estimate at least 63,000 Mississippians age 65 or older are living with Alzheimer's, and that's from the Diseases Association, Alzheimer's Association. While doctors are learning more about the cognitive disease every day, the root causes of it remain unknown. Brian Boutwell is an associate professor at the University of Mississippi Medical Center and one of the authors of this new report. He says the number of molecules in the body that transport LDL cholesterol, what your doctor may call the bad cholesterol, has a correlating connection to the number of patients diagnosed with Alzheimer's.
What we were interested in with this particular study is trying to better understand a very interesting result that had been emerging in a few places in prior research on Alzheimer's disease. Specifically, that had to do with sort of the main particle that we focused on, apolipoprotein B, or ApoB for short. So ApoB is part of the lipid molecule. It's what helps move things like LDL cholesterol around in the body. And it's important for a lot of reasons. It has been of interest for decades in the cardiology community. It has an important role to play in cardiovascular health. What was interesting to us in this case was some of the sort of very interesting evidence suggesting that it might be linked in some unknown way to Alzheimer's disease. And so what we set out to do was try and understand that possible link a little bit better by using a method called Mendelian randomization that simply just was an attempt to let us probe the possible effects that ApoB might have on something like Alzheimer's disease.
What did it mean to y'all be able to do this research, and how could it be applied in the future for further research?
So this topic in general is one that's been interesting to me for a long time, in part because I'm broadly interested in human cognition, many aspects of it. But this particular disease is one that is prevalent, it's frightening, and it affects so many people, you know, not unlike something like cancer, which is, you know, has those same sort of hallmarks of being very frightening and prevalent and something that people understandably worry about. One of the things that we try to be careful about in the paper, but also anytime we discuss it, is that this is a single finding, and it's certainly nothing like knockdown proof that ApoB has some type of causal effect on Alzheimer's. But it does suggest that that very intriguing association that we've seen in the past looks a little more intriguing after using a little bit more of a rigorous approach to test for the effects of that particular molecule on Alzheimer's. And so without wanting to speculate too much, if other studies continue to find similar things, ultimately what you hope is that it could possibly play some small role, any role in future efforts to sort of stave off the onset of Alzheimer's.
So I guess within the context of this study, were y'all seeing that somebody having more of these molecules that move cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, has a link to a higher chance of a person developing Alzheimer's?
That is what our results suggested. That's right. The higher levels of the ApoB particle appeared to have, you know, these sort of direct effects on Alzheimer's disease.
Now, at risk of being thrown into the deep end of technical ideas and things that y'all are looking at, what is the working theory that y'all have about how these molecules play into Alzheimer's?
So that may be the single most important question to ask, assuming that our finding continues to replicate. I think the most honest answer I can give you is that I honestly am just not sure. I don't think, from my vantage point, it's not clear yet how that would work. And it will be, you know, a long process and involve a lot of hard work from other folks who work, you know, especially in lab settings, to try and unpack whether this has something to do with inflammation or some other mechanism by which this particular particle is causing the risk to go up. And I'm not even suggesting is inflammation. I just mentioned that as an example of the amount of work that needs to be done to try and figure out if this is a real finding, what the mechanism is. And while that can seem unsatisfying as an answer, and I certainly understand that, it really is, I think, quite hopeful, because if the finding in our paper continues to emerge again and again and again, it means that we have a mechanism we need to be looking for with considerable effort and time expended. So I think I view that as hopeful. It means we are at least beginning to look in the right places.
Now, as science goes and y'all begin to pass the baton to the next teams who investigate this further or begin to spin off into, you know, deeper experiments around this topic, what do you expect to see in the coming months to years?
Well, so I think it will actually involve a series of next steps. And so one of those steps will be a continuation of what my colleagues and I did with this paper, which is approach the question using one particular method, a really useful, interesting method that allows us to sort of pursue the question in a certain way. And at the same time, there are other ways of sort of exploring this issue, whether it's future clinical trials with cholesterol lowering medications that can start to give us some additional insight about this particular topic, ApoB and Alzheimer's, as well as sort of the classical laboratory types of research that we were sort of alluding to earlier, which attempts to understand more at a molecular and cellular level what might be happening in terms of, you know, close causal proximity that would sort of create this causal effect of ApoB on Alzheimer's pathology. And so I think it really is not a single step. The point is more that a series of steps going concurrently, all of which sort of trying to a term we use that you'll see in Mendelian randomization research and other places, trying to triangulate the evidence as best we can, knowing that one single study is not sufficient for sweeping change. But when we can compile evidence using a variety of techniques from a variety of places, it starts to give us much more traction in terms of solving a problem.
Brian Boutwell is an associate professor at the University of Mississippi. Brian, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
This has been Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.